You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiner.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman number 48, Batman Prelude to the Wedding, Nightwing versus Hush number 1, The Man of Steel number 2, Justice League number 1, and Supergirl season 3 episode 21, Not Kansas. But before we get into that, let's get into some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC writer Tom King is scheduled to be a guest star on NBC's Late Night with Seth Meyers. And according to show producer Mike Shoemaker, King is scheduled for the Tuesday, June 12th edition. This is just weeks before Batman and Catwoman plan marriage in July Force Batman number 50.
That's really cool. I know Seth Meyers is a big comic guy himself. He actually had a pretty funny animated series called The Awesomes that's still on Hulu, if that's something you're interested in. So he's had some comic guests on before, but that's really cool. I'm very excited to check that interview out.
I am too. I'm very excited to see what Tom King has to say about Batman number 50.
Yeah.
And which I'm getting very excited for, especially after seeing this, after reading this week's Batman number 48, which we will be talking about very soon.
Seth is also a huge Ted Kord Blue Beetle fan, so I'm kind of curious if he'll ask about a blue and gold team up in Booster's future.
Yeah, that would be cool to find out about, huh?
I don't know if he'll ask that or not, but I would be happy if he did.
All right, and next up for DC news, GameStop will start selling comic books, but they're only starting this in a selected 20 locations. And when I was reading the article, it also said something about Think Geek. So I didn't know if they were owned by the same company or not, but apparently they're going to be putting some of the locations are going to be some Think Geek. So pretty awesome, really. I've been surprised, because I've wondered this before, why they haven't sold comic books in gaming stores before. Just seems to fit, if you ask me.
I was seeing that they were going to try it on a trial basis. I don't know. I don't expect it to last, to be honest, not because it's not a good idea. I do think it's a good idea. But comics just don't make a ton of money. And GameStop being the very large corporation as it is, I think they're going to have unrealistic expectations for how much money it's going to bring in. And when it doesn't do that, they're going to just not go forward with it, which is dumb. But I feel like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, but I guess the thing I'm thinking about it is having a more of a one-stop shopping.
Yeah.
I know that's not good for the comic book shops that just deal with comic books, but it is kind of cool to get that crowd that's the gaming crowd more interested in comics, hopefully. That's what I'm hoping it does.
I agree. Well, I mean, also, let's be honest, GameStop has got to figure out how to keep people coming to their store, because more and more gamers are going digital and simply not buying games at all, and so or physical games at all. So you gotta, as a business like GameStop, they've got to figure out a way to stay in the game. So hopefully it works out. It would be really cool for them to carry comics. At the same time, I agree with you. I hope it doesn't put local comic shops out either.
Yeah, of course, more people are going to digital comics too. I mean, I'm one of them. I mean, I still get physical copies once in a while, but most of my comics are digital too, so I guess I can't say too much about that. All right, and moving on to our next bit of DC news. All right, and I'll probably butcher his name, but Legends of Tomorrow is losing Keenan Lonsdale as a series regular. That's Wally West, for those who can't figure out what name I said because I butchered it. But so he's leaving Legends Tomorrow as a season regular, and But it has been confirmed that Wally West is going to be in the first episode of Flash Season 5. And he has said that he's not against reprising his role as a guest star. So we may see him back every once in a while.
I'm very curious what they're gonna do. I feel like he must show up in some capacity on Legends briefly, you would think, just to explain why he's not there. It's possible. I mean, they could just do a throwaway line also, but I'm curious what to see what they'll do with the Legends, because unfortunately for the shows, they've established that like he's very excited to be becoming a legend, so you've got to figure out how can you not suddenly do a 180 on that. Story-wise.
Like you said, they could do a throwaway line because he's going to be appearing on The Flash. They may explain it on The Flash.
As for the actor, I totally get it. I mean, especially when he got the role, wasn't necessarily super young, but I mean, a young adult, and now he's obviously a little bit older. He's got a lot of, other, he's got a music career that's starting and just kind of want to figure out what he's doing. I totally get it. I don't blame the guy at all. I wish him luck, and I do hope to see him back occasionally because I very much enjoyed his interpretation of Wally.
I did too. I was really looking forward to him being on Legends this season, so
Yeah, me too.
I'm kind of disappointed in that. It was cool seeing him at the end. Was he on for about half a season last year?
But oh yeah, I'd say a little under that, but yeah.
Yeah. So it was cool seeing him on there, but disappointing that he's going to be gone, but I wish him the best. And for our next bit of DC news, DC's relaunching Vertigo comic imprint with 7 new titles. Now, I think we announced this before because we had talked about the 4 Sandman titles that were previously being announced, but they're actually adding 7 other titles under the Vertigo imprint. So we got Border Town, Hex Wives, American Carnage, Goddess Mode, High Level, Safe Sex, and Second Coming. Now, I don't know if any of these had been done before, or if they're just all brand new launches. But looks like an interesting lineup for the Vertigo titles.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that they're bringing Vertigo back. I still think it was so dumb that they got rid of it in the first place. So I'm glad they are rectifying their mistake. I'm not going to give DC credit for bringing back something they shouldn't have gotten rid of in the first place.
All right, and if you want to find out more about the titles and who's writing them and drawing them, you can check out the Earth Station DCU Facebook group. I have a post on there, so it's got all the details. And if you're not signed up there now, why not? All right, and for our next bit of new DC news, The Question returns thanks to Brian Michael Bendis. He's going to be appearing beginning in Action Comics number 1005.
That's awesome. That's super exciting. I also think that's a great character for Bendis to write. It's a perfect match, in my opinion. Like that, the question is very well suited to what Bendis's style is and the characters that he's done really well with over on Marvel. I think the question fits perfectly in that group. So I'm thrilled, honestly. I'm pretty excited to see what he does.
All right, and for our last bit of DC news, DC Entertainment President Diane Nelson is leaving the company. I guess she took a leave of absence back on April 2nd due to family issues, but apparently she's not coming back. A memo's been released from Warner Brothers Chairman and CEO Kevin, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, Tsuhara? I don't know. Has stated that she is officially no longer with the company. So, following the news of her leave of absence, Warner Brothers stated that Warner Brothers Chief Digital Officer and Executive VP of Strategy and Business Development, Thomas Gegwick, will serve as support for DC's executive management team, which includes DC co-publishers Dan Didio and Jim Lee, DC's Creative Officer Jeff Johns, DC's Executive VP of Business and Marketing Strategy, Amit Desai. And it has not been announced if that will change or if a replacement will be found for Nelson. So that's what's going on there.
I don't know. I hope everything's going that's going on in her life is okay. And if it's not, I hope it works out. But I'd be hard pressed to say that she oversaw a successful era for DC stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I wish her luck in her personal life. I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing for DC, though.
Well, right now we're seeing DC go through changes, so with a lot of their titles. So it'll be interesting to see what's going on moving forward. I don't know if any of the DC changes we have going on now has anything to do with her exiting or not, but some of the changes I'm looking forward to, especially some of the runs we like Detective Comics and the Hal Jordan and the Green Lanterns. We're looking forward to some of those changes. Justice League, I mean, it had been terrible for a while, so we'll see how DC is moving forward here. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special commercial for We Podcast and We Know Things.
Wow, a commercial?
Yes, Sam, a commercial. You do this to me every time. Anyway, we are We Podcast and We Know Things, the single source for all of your nerdy news in gaming, TV, film, music, and all things pop culture. Heck, even wrestling. We're basically spreading the good word of nerd one episode at a time.
Check us out here on the ESO Podcast Network and wherever fine podcasts are, including the iOS podcast app, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the goings-on in the nerdy world. Now back to your ESO Network podcast.
Who's better than us?
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you. We got spoilers,
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 spoilers.
We've got spoilers,
spoilers
for you, for you.
Let's talk Batman number 48. All right, Cletus, we find out in this issue just how crazy the Joker is. The Joker shows how crazy he is by taking a church hostage to bring out Batman. So we see Joker crash a wedding and basically begins killing everybody. So we have this man who is saying this prayer. As he's saying this prayer, we're seeing gunshots in the background. Or at least they're having the bam or whatever in the background. And you kind of see the guy cringing as he's praying. You know, kind of, it was really unsettling.
Yeah, yes, it was. Yeah, Tom King writes a very terrifying Joker.
Yes, he does. So when it actually cut to Joker, you see him standing there with a bunch of dead bodies around. And of course, he's singing the old Batman 66 bat theme. Na 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 na, Batman. And of course, right after he says Batman, Batman comes crashing through the stained glass window, which was awesome, but it was also creepy.
Yes.
Okay, so when Batman comes crashing through and lands there, Joker's basically like, I gotta take a hostage so Batman doesn't punch me. And of course, while he has the hostage there, he's kind of talking with Batman. He ends up shooting the hostage, and then he has no hostage. Tom King really showed how crazy the Joker was in this.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's the same thing that he did when we were reading The War of Jokes and Riddles, too. It's not a Joker that is like, it's a very sub. It's it. I don't know how to say it. He's extremely violent, but it's in a way that's not gratuitous, I don't think. Like he commits some very severe atrocities in both The War of Jokes and Riddles and this, but they do it in a way that's not gory. You know what I mean? Like it's just, it emphasizes how terrifying he is as a villain, but also doesn't go too far over the top and kind of become a little ridiculous either.
He may not be over the top, but he's very crazy and yeah, unpredictable. I think both The War of Jokes and Riddles and this shows kind of how unpredictable he is. He has no remorse for killing anybody. After he shoots all his hostages, he's still got to find another hostage so Batman won't punch him, so he puts the gun to Batman's head. Joker ends up shooting Batman at point blank range, not killing him. I know the mask was supposed to be Kevlar. I couldn't really believe that one. I know it may be true. I've never seen a test done with Kevlar shot at point blank range, but it kind of suspended my belief on that one. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I guess I've been so conditioned by all the many different times Batman has been shot and not had an issue that I just like, they're all equally unbelievable, but it's just sort of like, okay, it's Batman. You know what I mean? Like, I agree with you. Yes, it is unrealistic that that would work out okay for Batman, but it's also very much in line with how Batman usually is shot. So
that is true, but it did pull me out of the story just a little bit.
No, that's fair. That's totally fair.
All right. So now after that, we see the Joker turn the gun on himself. I'm like, really, dude? You really think that's gonna keep Batman from stopping you? But Batman didn't react the way I expected him to, and just kind of hung back. The thing about Batman in this issue was he didn't really talk that much, and to me, he felt like he was acting out of character a little bit, especially when the Joker asked him to kneel with him and pray. It felt really odd, I thought. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure. Normally, I would say that Batman was trying to avoid escalating the situation, but I don't know. There wasn't anything left to escalate. The entire church was already dead.
See, that I would, if there was anybody still alive in that church, that's what I would have believed too, that Batman would have gone along with him to save people. But there was nobody left alive, you know. Yeah. Fully expect Batman in that situation, if Joker's put a gun to his head, that he'd go after the Joker anyways.
Yeah.
Because number one, I can't see the Joker shooting himself. And two, I don't see that stopping Batman with nobody else in danger. So, I don't know, it just fell out of character for me for that scene, too. Now, the Joker asking to be Batman's best man, definitely Joker.
Yeah, I agree. So, let me ask you a question. Where do you think issue 50, like, we know issue 50 is the wedding, but the Joker we thought was supposed to be in that, I wonder how that's going to play out now, because we've got the Joker going on here.
Yes, I'm wondering how that's going to play out too, because my gut tells me this story is going to wrap up next issue, and I'm totally expecting Selina to come in and save the day.
Agreed.
That's what it feels like is going to happen to me.
Totally agree with you, and I think that I'm fine with that, honestly.
I'm fine with that too, especially with Batman not doing much in this issue. Batman should have been able to take him down. I don't know why he didn't. Yeah. And maybe we'll find out why next issue, but I don't know. Batman did not feel like Batman in this issue. But man, did Tom King do a good job of the Joker.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Even with the two issues I had with this issue was awesome.
I agree.
I'm really excited about issue 49, and who knows, maybe issue 49 is going to end with a cliffhanger. Who knows what Tom King's got planned. Let me tell you, the next issue we're going to talk about, we find out a lot more about the wedding stuff, because I wasn't sure about some things. We'll talk about that next, though. Anything else you want to say about Batman 48 before we move on?
It was great. It was a great issue.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's move on to Batman Prelude to the Wedding, Batman versus Hush number one. Before we get into this more, do you think this should have been out before last week's Robin versus Ra's al Ghul?
Not necessarily. No, I feel like these are all sort of taking place around the same time-ish. So I don't know. It didn't really.
Okay, because it felt like it to me. And maybe that's because...
What I think is weird, to me what's weird is this, is that this one and the Robin one, because Catwoman was in it, both have the threat of Joker right at the end of it, and that clearly, and again, it seems like this whole thing is that the Joker is going to be a huge menace for the wedding, but they're dealing with him right now, and that's what I'm confused about more so, is that the ends of both of these threaten the Joker's craziness, which is fine. Like, I think that's awesome, but we're seeing the Joker's craziness being dealt with pre-wedding. So that's the only thing that's not necessarily bad by any means, but it's surprising to me.
I think it's all going to hinge on what happens at the end of issue 49.
Yeah.
Because it could end up being a three-story arc with some time in between 49 and 50 before the Joker makes his next move. Just a guess, though. But it would make sense. A big, you know, 50 is usually a landmark kind of issue, so I'm totally expecting the Joker to be in it. But I guess we'll find out. All right. For this issue, we have Superman and Nightwing are taking Bruce out for his bachelor party. But they're not doing anything wild, though. they can't take him to Batburger, which I thought was hilarious. And they plan on going fishing in a pocket dimension. I think one of the biggest takeaways we have from this issue was the fact that we learned that Batman and Catwoman are getting married, and Bruce and Selina are not. They're keeping that part secret, which I found very interesting, because I was wondering how they were going to handle the secret identity issue. And it makes totally sense to keep Bruce Wayne single and separate from Batman. You know what I mean?
I thought that was very clever to put in there. Because I had been wondering the same thing. I was like, how are they going to be able to keep people from figuring that one out? So that was, I think that was smart.
And it makes sense if the rumors going around that Batman and Catwoman are getting married, that the Joker would find out. It also
makes a lot of sense when you really consider, especially the way Tom King has been telling his story overall, where Batman and Catwoman are so right for each other because they both accept each other as Batman. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're in love very much with their real selves, which are their their costume selves.
Right. So yeah, it makes total sense. I'm glad they explained this, and I kind of wish they'd explained it a little earlier, but that's another reason why I felt this issue should have came out before the other one, but that's just my opinion. So they're getting ready to go to this pocket dimension to go fishing when Hush shows up and attacks Bruce, and he's upset with Bruce for cutting him out of his life. We found out that Hush found out that Batman was getting married from the Joker. The other thing that was weird, I thought, was Hush made his face look like Dick Grayson. Did you find
that
weird?
It fit well with the story. I'm very curious if they're going to end up doing something with that. Or I wonder if he's going to come back and he's going to have one of those no-face things going on.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. That could be, too.
It would also be, it would fit kind of well with it. There was some very intriguing, I thought this was a cool story, but I also thought it laid some intriguing groundwork for potential Hush stories, I thought.
Yeah, that's exactly what I felt when I was reading this, too. It felt like it was doing some setup. That's one of the things I put in my notes. I get the feeling this is going to play out in a future Nightwing or Batman story. I thought it was kind of weird that Superman was the one that had the pocket dimension thingamajigger. When they start fighting, Nightwing and Hush end up getting trapped in that other dimension. Well, I don't think it was another dimension. I think it was a world that was in between dimensions. And it talked about the people there being echoes of people from our dimension. But they were like hungry ghosts or something. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But something I would like to explore more, because it was interesting.
Very much so. Well, even if we don't explore that dimension necessarily, just whatever ends up happening to Hush in that dimension, I think is very interesting.
Yeah, because my gut tells me it's going to change his character, and he will be coming back. I have no doubt of that.
I did also like that they basically met the dude there, or a version of the dude there.
Yeah, that was funny.
What did they call him? Like the guy or something like that?
I can't remember, but I just remember it was funny.
Yeah.
So, a couple other things we found out from this issue. We found out that Superman is actually going to be Batman's best man. So they kind of explained that and why it wasn't Dick Grayson. And then
it makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. One of the other things that we found out is when Joker found out about the wedding, he started telling the other villains. So not only am I expecting the Joker to show up in issue 50, I'm expecting other Batman villains to show up. I think it's going to get really interesting in that issue number 50.
Yeah.
The other thing they said, because the Joker has been telling other villains, that's why we're getting these other one-shots. Like, next week we're supposed to be getting Batgirl versus the Riddler.
I am super intrigued by that one. I'm very excited to read that story.
I am too. And we really we haven't seen the Riddler since the Joker War and, War of Jokes and Riddles. So I'm curious to see if we're going to get any history of what's been going on with the Riddler.
Yeah.
And how he's changed since that too. So I'm really intrigued to read that issue next week.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Man of Steel number 2. So we're continuing this mini-series, and the issue opens up with two members of the Galactic Circle. So we have Lord Gundello, who apparently rules over 42 systems, and we have Appa... what is his name? Appa Ali Apsa?
Appa Ali Apsa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the Guardians. And we see them talking back and forth. Lord Gundello, he is pissed at Appa Ali Apsa. Man, he's pissed at the Guardian. Basically because Krypton got destroyed and he was blaming him for letting Rogol Zar. So he's upset that he destroyed Krypton.
Understandably so.
Yeah. And one of the other things they did during this little conversation, they name dropped two other names. I wasn't sure if you knew who they were. King Mander.
No, neither of them meant anything to me.
Or Sardoth. Okay, they didn't mean anything to me. My gut was telling me since they name dropped them, we might be seeing them more later in this miniseries.
I would think at least if we see more of that group.
So I'm still curious what this group it actually is or does.
Yeah.
So
with this issue. Can you tell? We kind of theorized maybe last time that the threat of Rogol Zar actually is not the present of the story, and that was not answered in this issue. I thought that was kind of interesting. I still can't totally. I don't. Or maybe it is, and I just can't tell yet whether or not Rogol Zar has already come to Earth, or whether that's going to happen.
After reading this issue, I still didn't know that either. We did see a little brief scene where he was in the Vega system and he finds out about Superman, because from that scene it seemed to me that he did not know there was any Kryptons left.
That's I had to call BS a little bit on that one, because early, just a little bit, like a couple panels earlier, they established that he goes to that place somewhat regularly, not like frequently, but not like every 1,000 years or something like that. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
A decent amount of time that he goes there. How would you not have heard of? Unless the only way he could never have heard of Superman is if he only exclusively lived in that cave. Like, Superman has been well established to be a universally known person in the DC universe because he's so powerful. That's why people leave Earth alone. Or they come to Earth is specific. Either they leave Earth alone because he's there, or they go there specifically to challenge him. How would you have never heard of the insanely powerful Kryptonian on Earth?
I don't know, Cletus, but you got to remember the universe is a big place.
Yeah, yes, but it's also like him being like, "What? There are Green Lanterns?"
I don't know. I mean. It's possible. I mean, he is in the Vegas system, which is, I don't know at this time if it was, but at one point the Vegas system was off limits to the Green Lanterns.
I think that sounds right.
So, you know, if he's out in the Vegas system away from things, maybe he didn't hear about Superman.
That's fair.
It depends on how off the grid he's been.
Yeah.
So there's argument for both sides in that. All right. One of the other big mysteries that we have in this issue that didn't get answered either is what the heck happened with Lois and John. And that seems to be the big mystery, I think, in this issue, because we got that reporter Robinson Good, who we know is some sort of villain, but they haven't revealed it yet. She's the new city desk clerk, and she starts talking to one of the other ladies there about Clark, and gets her interested in what's going on with Lois and Clark. But when we get that scene where Clark, Lois, and John are together, I was still confused by what happened or what that thing was. That they actually showed us a picture of what they were seeing, and I didn't even know what the heck it was.
I had no clue either. It was like when they revealed that, I was like, and?
Yeah, exactly. And then I was not sure. Did Superman fly to the moon, or he get transported to the moon, or he get slammed into the moon? I was confused.
No clue.
Okay. I mean, Bendis has got me intrigued. I want some answers, and this issue didn't answer nothing. Two more things we find out in this issue. Number one, there's been another arson in Metropolis. So there's something going on with that. Two, the Daily Planet has been sold, but they didn't tell us to whom. And Barry White didn't seem to have any answers to that either, but he was very stressed about it.
Yeah.
So not very many answers in issue number two.
Yeah, but I was surprised a little, to be honest with you, with how few answers there were.
Yeah, I was too, but I'm still intrigued with this series.
Oh, no, I agree. I totally agree.
Oh, we forgot to mention Superman stopping Toyman in Coast City and meeting up with Green Lantern. I thought that was pretty cool. But one of the things we find out when he meets up with Green Lantern is Superman's been ignoring his friends, you know, like Green Lantern, because Hal was wanting to meet him to meet up with him for dinner, for lunch or dinner or something.
So, okay, see, I wasn't sure how to read that scene, because the way I read it initially made it seem like he was talking specifically about Hal, that Hal keeps trying to be his friend, and Superman on some level is just like, nah. Like, I don't want to be your friend, Hal. And I was like, wait, why?
No.
Why of all characters are you deciding that Hal's the dick that Superman doesn't want to be friends with?
No, that is not how I took that at all.
Okay.
How I took it was Hal's reaching out to Green Lantern, or not Green Lantern. Hal is reaching out to Superman, and Superman's kind of ignoring him and some of the other super friends.
Okay, that makes sense.
And he also mentioned he missed the last one or two Justice League meetings. Superman is not being Superman, pretty much is what he's saying. Something is bothering him that he doesn't want to confront with the rest of the super friends, Justice League, whatever. So he's trying to avoid them and handle whatever is going on his own. But we don't really see him handle anything besides doing his Superman stuff and being a reporter. I'm wondering what's going on. Because he acts like something's happened to John and Lois. He doesn't seem like it's something he can stop or knows how to handle it, or doesn't even know where the heck they're at, so he doesn't even know where to begin. So he just has to keep going on with his normal life until he figures out what to do. That's the sense I got from Superman.
I hope it's a really good explanation, to be honest, because if it's not, like, if it's sort of a lame one, it would really be like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's good. I'm not saying it won't be. I don't know. I'm hoping that it is something good.
I mean, if Lois and John were in trouble somehow, Superman would go charging in. That's Superman. Him hanging back or whatnot, there have to be a major reason why he wouldn't go after them.
Right.
I'm curious to find out what that reason is. All right, let's move on to Justice League number one. I got to tell you, Cletus, two things about this issue. I like this issue. I hated this issue. And I got
Tell me more.
So I got explanations why. First, I'm going to bring up why I hated this issue. Number one reason why I hated this issue, I am sick of the cosmic threats. For my Justice League comics, I want something that's not so cosmic, or something that's not going to destroy the Earth. I want to see more buddy team-up kind of things where we're handling stuff that's not a cosmic threat to the Earth every time. You know, I want the Justice League, I want to see the Justice League doing super stuff and being normal. I want to see them sparring or eating lunch and talking about things going on in their lives. I want to see them handle Lex Luthor or the Joker or, you know, something that's a threat, that's a threat to more than one superhero can handle. You know, maybe two or three or four of them teaming up. I'm getting tired of this cosmic, the Earth is going to be destroyed. We need to bring in every superhero and villain and everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just getting too much every story being like that. Number two complaint. When they reveal Lex Luthor in his Legion of Doom, Sinestro was not wearing his Sinestro Corps costume.
So dumb. I hated that. When I saw that, I was like, if you're seriously going to draw Sinestro that way, I'm going to be so mad. That costume is dumb. I'm sorry. It's a relic of the past. I don't think there's anybody who is not a Silver Age purist who wants to see that costume over the Sinestro Corps costume. I'm just going to say it.
Right. Exactly. I don't like that costume. When they changed it to his Sinestro Corps costume, I thought that was awesome.
I actually wrote about this I've talked about it before. I wrote my master's thesis mainly on Black Adam and Sinestro. And one of the things I talked about in my paper was that his costume change went a long way towards revitalizing him as a villain. And as a villain, you can take seriously because his old costume is doofy. It's a goofy looking costume. And you can't take him seriously as like the biggest, baddest threat to the Sinestro Corps, to the Green Lantern Corps. And when they gave him his own Corps, when they gave him that new costume, it went so far. I mean, obviously it took John's storytelling to, you know, fully complete that transformation, but that costume goes a long way. It's a good villainous costume. Like, it just, everything about it, that the armband that is reminiscent of the Nazi armband, just the color scheme, everything just oozes villainy. Why would you get rid of that?
I don't know. And I saw that and I was like, you've got to be freaking kidding me. We better not have that costume the whole freaking story. But because I do not like it at all. So never have liked that costume. So we'll see what happens. Another issue I had a problem with was, is John Jones getting a new origin story? It felt like it in this. I don't know. What'd you think about that?
They've done some funky stuff with Martian Manhunter in recent years. Honestly, if whatever it does finally gives us like Martian Manhunter being a major Justice League character again and not being semi-antagonistic like he's been for most of the New 52, that would be great. So, I mean, like, it's weird, but if it leads us to getting classic Martian Manhunter again, I'm fine with that.
Okay, and the last reason I didn't like this issue was Lex Luthor's turn to evil. Like we talked about last week, and I think even a little before then, there was no transition from him turning from good to evil.
Yeah.
And we didn't.
It's such a waste.
And we didn't see it here. Now, did you see the article I posted on the Earth Station DCU Facebook group? Did you read Scott Snyder's interview with...
Oh, no, I have not read that one yet.
Dang it, that's why I tagged you on that.
I'm sorry.
Because I wanted to talk about that tonight. But it said that I was happy when I read that article. Snyder is going to be addressing Lex Luthor's turn to evil in the next issue of Justice League.
Perfect.
So I'm glad they're going to address it. But as for right now of reading this issue, his turn to evil, there's no transition to it. I'm still not happy about it. So they're going to...
He's bad. He's full villain in this issue.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. So I'm interested in Snyder's story of his transition because he mentioned in his interview that there's a transition from the end of Justice No Justice to this, I think is what he said. It's either that or between Metal and Justice No Justice. I can't remember. So the transition's in there somewhere till now. So he's going to go back and tell us about it. So I was happy to read that. That's one of the reasons why I tagged you in that. All right, let's talk about what I did like about this issue. The Hall of Justice. I thought that was pretty cool. The psychic link of the heroes. So it basically shows the Martian Manhunter being the leader of the Justice League with his psychic connection to the heroes. I thought that was a cool idea.
Yes, it should be.
Love the Martian Manhunter dragon shape-shifting thing he did. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're pulling out a lot of the... Because remember, he used that dragon sort of transformation a few times in the animated series.
Yeah, which is cool. I was also happy to see the core team lineup plus extra characters. So let's talk about that for a minute. It looked like the core team, who was sitting around that table with the psychic link that the Martian Manhunter did. So we got Martian Manhunter, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Cyborg, Hawkgirl, and Aquaman. So I thought that was pretty cool. Now, one thing I have to say about... They had Cyborg sitting at that table, but we've read... I remember announcing it on DC News one time that Cyborg is eventually supposed to be going back to the Titans or Teen Titans or something. So I don't know how long he's going to last here. The other thing I remember reading is I thought Jon Stewart was supposed to be part of the main team, and they didn't show that here. So I don't know if there's going to be a transition of this core team at some point
or not. I think so, because I think this is still mostly the Justice League lineup they had already been using. It is odd, like, Hot Girl is already on there because she'd been nothing to do with the Justice League since the New 52 started.
Yeah, so wasn't sure about that. Now, let's talk about some of the other characters we saw in this issue, and I was happy to see them because I'm wondering if they're going to do the core Justice League with these other members coming in once in a while, which would be pretty cool. We saw Plastic Man, Mr. Terrific, Swamp Thing, Hawkman, Adam Strange, and of course Jon Stewart. So I was happy to see these other characters, which it tells me they're going to have a core Justice League and they're going to be bringing in some other characters once in a while. It just kind of felt like the animated series to me.
Oh yeah, definitely. Which I think is exactly what they're going for.
So I'm happy about that. And another reason I like this issue was the return of the Legion of Doom. Now, for the Legion of Doom we saw in this issue was Lex Luthor, Joker, Sinestro, Gorilla Grodd, Cheetah, and Black Manta.
As long as Sinestro wears his good costume.
I know what you mean. So, and I'm wondering if the Justice League pulls in, you know, has their core team with other heroes. I'm wondering if the Legion of Doom is going to have their core team with other villains possibly coming in. So I've talked a lot about what I liked and disliked about this issue. I mean, overall, I'm looking forward to this. I said what I liked and disliked about this issue. What did you like and dislike about this issue?
I think a lot of the same things, honestly. I love that they're bringing the Hall of Justice in. I love that they seem to be pulling heavily from the animated series, which I think is a very good idea. I love that they're using the Legion of Doom. I agree that the Lex thing is silly, and I am glad that Snyder's going to address that. I have to say, though, I understand what you want with a Justice League book where it's not dealing with cosmic threats, but I think the problem with that is that, unlike the Avengers, for example, where you can have a team of Avengers that is not necessarily powerful enough to deal with cosmic threats, the Justice League is kind of too powerful to deal with silly stuff. You know what I mean? Like, they're a team with Green Lantern, Superman, The Flash, like Wonder Woman. I mean, these are insanely powerful individuals, so the threats kind of have to be big. I think that's one. It can be both a good and bad thing about the Justice League, is that you can't have really small issues with the Justice League. They always kind of have to be big because they're such a powerful team. However, I do think you cannot have Fate of the Universe problems. Like, if you look at Johns' run on the New 52, which I know people liked some parts and didn't like other parts, I generally enjoyed it. Like, if you looked at, like, the Throne of Atlantis storyline, I think that's the thing, I think that was the name of the one, where Aquaman's brother invades the surface world and the Justice League has to defeat him. That sort of thing is perfect, where you have, like, a big threat, an Earth-based threat. And yes, Earth is very much in danger, but it's not... the universe itself is in danger. I think that's kind of really the best case scenario for a Justice League story. Because I think if you get too small, you start to get kind of dumb stuff, like with Priest Run, where you started getting things where they're like, they're saving people from a train, but then you have people being like, oh, but you didn't save this other neighborhood. And like, I don't want to read that in a Justice League book.
I don't either, but they could have done that story without having that stuff in it. And, you know, it just seems like the world's always in danger. We saw it in the animated series where we get to see the characters do some everyday interacting too, besides just saving the world all the time.
Yeah.
I want to see the camaraderie and the characters getting involved with each other's personal lives and stuff. A perfect example is the Trinity issue. The Trinity, that first issue where Superman invites over, Lois invited over Wonder Woman and Batman for dinner. You know, that kind of stuff. I want to see some of that too, just not the world being in danger all the time. I want to have some more of the, I want to have personal connections between the heroes and see that, how they interact with their daily lives, along with the world kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where every issue, because just like Priest Justice League run, it seemed like every story was the world was in danger. Of course, the stories weren't that great about it either. But I don't know. That was just my. I'd like to see more personal stuff between the characters, honestly. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about it?
I agree with a lot of what you were saying. I am looking forward to seeing what Snyder's going to do with it. I think it has the potential to be pretty good.
I do too. All right, well, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Supergirl.
You ever been curious about the real or fictional worlds?
In the beginning, there were laser kings and giant robots.
Those who created...
I'm going to feed you to this tentacle monster now. No.
Or what inspires.
And I remember being in my room with my brother, and we immediately, like within 5 seconds, he decided he was a DC fan and I decided I was a Marvel fan. And we were going through and sorting out all of the comics.
And you might enjoy Hubie Tigers, the only podcast show where we take life by the tail. Now available on Google Play, Stitcher, and iTunes, and of course, your favorite podcasting app. This is Hubie Tigers.
And we're back! Let's talk Supergirl, Season 3, Episode 21, Not Kansas. This episode opens up basically right where the last episode ended, with Supergirl and Mon-El coming back from Argo City, and they go into battle right away with Rain. Mon-El hands over the rock to Lena. Supergirl and Mon-El start battling Rain right away. It is a very short fight scene, but it was cool.
It was cool, and then when it was over and they... at least at that point, apparently had defeated Rain, and she was completely eradicated from Sam's body. I was like, oh, well, where do we go now?
Season's over. Let's have a nice day.
And it was so weird. I thought they actually had a lot of fun with it, too, as a show, because they had a lot of the, like, that middle part of the show would work as a season finale, where they're, like, having the happy send-off for Supergirl, and she kind of goes off to Earth, leaves Earth off to Argo City. Like, all of that could very easily, you could very easily see being, like, the final 15 minutes of the season.
Yeah, you could. It felt like a season finale, didn't it?
It did, and I was like, but knowing it's not, I was like, okay, I'm fine with this, but where are we going now with this show?
Yeah.
But I will say, once that kind of, the plot in Argo City kind of got going, and especially towards the end when, the gal's true plan is revealed, super intriguing. I thought that was so good. I mean, I was already enjoying at least the Supergirl part of the episode, And then when we got to that, I was like, oh, this is going to be a really interesting final three episodes or so.
So, yeah. So let's talk about Kara. So after they stop Rain or get her out of Samantha, Supergirl asks Lena to synthesize more of the Black Rock mineral. So Lena's going to be doing that. Kara decides she wants to go back home, which makes perfect sense.
Yep.
We see her get a party thrown at the DEO, and she's not saying goodbye forever. She's going to come back eventually, whether she's just coming back to visit or coming back for a while. She's not going to be staying gone forever. She made that clear. Then we see she has another party, but it wasn't clear if it was at the at Catco.
It seems like a Catco party. I was surprised that they showed that, because I was like, well, that just all to me that begs is like, well, how are people not putting two and two together here?
But they were, the thing about Kara leaving there, she was going on assignment. So apparently she was going on assignment there, and that's what that party was for.
Sure.
So
all I'm saying is that Lena should have figured it out by now, is all I'm saying. I understand other people, but Lena should have figured it out by now.
Well, maybe she's too distracted by that Black Rock mineral she's got. Anyways, we have Kara deciding she's going to go back. We have Mon-El decide he wants to go back to the Legion. And he asks Kara to send a message for her when she gets back to Argo City for the Legion to come pick him up. And what was surprising was Kara asked Mon-El to come back with her to Argo City.
Oh, man. The whole episode, I felt so awkward for the two of them, because, like, I have to say, I thought I really like the way they've written Mon-El for this, where, like, he kind of knows that he really shouldn't say anything, and you can see him actively trying to avoid putting himself and putting Kara, more importantly, into that situation. And then he kind of eventually forced to. I loved how they finally dealt with that, because I was worried that the problem you have with this is it's very hard for him to not come across as a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
And I thought that the way they managed to write that, when we finally get to that scene where he finally tells her that he still feels that way, I thought they wrote that really well. I thought he came off looking about as good as you possibly can.
Right. And Kara, you know, she expressed her true feelings too. She talked about her dream that we saw at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mon-El basically says, hey, I've been lying to myself, you know, he's been trying to bury these feelings, but he's basically been lying to himself, and that they did have true feelings. One of the things I noticed they didn't do, they didn't kiss or anything. Of course, I don't know if they were kind of leading toward that or not, but they get interrupted by that Kryptonian robot that attacks them.
Yeah. And what I really liked with that, especially, not necessarily that they didn't kiss, but that Mon-El didn't make any move. That he basically says it, but that was the thing. I thought they wrote it super well, because he admits his feelings, but then he kind of just leaves it to Supergirl to decide what to do with that information. You know what I mean? He doesn't say that and then kind of throw himself at her or anything. It was like I said, I was like, wow, that was... I cannot think of a better way to write that scene. Like, if you're going to tell that story, I can't think of a better way to do it than what they did.
Right. You're right. He left it up to Kara to make the decision. And, you know, depending on what her decision is going to be is what he's going to do. And they did that scene perfectly with no kiss going on, no reaction. The robot interrupts it right at the right point. We're left hanging. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. It was good. The writing was excellent with that, and I think is very much in line with what most of the season has been. It's just been a very well plotted out show so far this year, I thought.
The other thing I love is they've really shown how Mon-El has matured since last season.
Oh yeah.
I mean, the Mon-El from last season. Oh man. I mean, you can really tell he's been gone for 5 years. And the other thing I have to say, I love the beard and mustache. It makes him feel, makes him look more mature.
It does. It really add to that look of like a kind of wiser, older Mon-El.
Yes, it does. I'm really curious to find out what's going to happen. And my gut tells me that Mon-El is going back to the Legion. So if they don't, if he doesn't, they're going to surprise me. Let's put it that way.
I agree with you completely. I still think it's unlikely that he stays. He could. I mean, it wouldn't be mad necessarily. He's a very enjoyable character. So I wouldn't be upset, but I would definitely be surprised.
I'd be surprised, but you know, I wouldn't mind him being around for another season. He's an awesome character, especially this season.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't dislike him last season. I know he wasn't a character doesn't have to necessarily be a good person for them to be an enjoyable character.
That's true. He was fun last season too. Yeah. So I do have to admit that.
He wasn't I agree. He was not necessarily a great person, but he was fun.
All right. The other thing I wanted to talk about with Carr's part of the episode was the fact that we have what do they call them? The Dark Kryptonians. We have the construction site incident, and Kara seeing the robe figure, and the whole episode. And I agreed with Kara; she had that gut feeling that something wasn't quite right. So we had that episode that happened. We have the thing in the restaurant where the robe figure shows up again, and Kara goes after her. And then we had the Kryptonian robot explode trying to kill them. So we had that going on. Then we get to the end of the episode where Kara and Mon-El find out John's ship's been stolen. And then we have that big burning, glowing rain symbol.
That was great. I thought the Supergirl plot, because I was very confused. Confused in a good way. I was like, wow, what are they going to do with this the rest of this season? Especially when last episode, the gal had the leader of these Dark Kryptonians voted to give her the stone. I was like, well, what's her plan? Because you know she's up to something.
Yeah.
And when you finally figured out, it was essentially Supergirl played exactly into what she wanted, where she basically gave her a means to get to Earth.
Yep.
Fascinating, and I bet you anything that she's using the world. I think we talked about this, that she's using the world killers to essentially sort of raise the Earth and then plant Argo City on it.
We hadn't talked about that.
Don't you think that's exactly what her plan is?
Yeah, it sounds like it might be, or they're just wanting to take over the Earth.
I think it's specifically so that they can put Argo City there, though. Hmm. I think it's for the the continuation, because they're essentially living on a clock. As soon as that rock runs out, they're done.
Yeah, that's true. That could be exactly what they're doing, and they want to have control of it, obviously.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the other part of the storyline. The Guardian and the Gen storyline. Before we get into that storyline, Guardian, at the beginning of the episode, just kind of sitting there in the basketball court or playing with that basketball or whatever he's doing. First of all, why are you going out to patrol the city when you don't even need to be out there? You should be back at Catco doing your job. But they're acting like, oh, there's nothing to do around here. So why are you even out in your freaking costume? You got plenty of other things you need to be doing with your life.
So that part, yes, I agree. That part was dumb. But the part to me that was dumb was the scene itself. What the hell are they doing playing? Oh, it was so bad. It was so bad. It was like, are we watching a 90s show right now? What is going on? Oh, that was dumb. That was a really dumb scene on multiple levels.
Yes, it was. I just couldn't believe they wrote that.
As for the gun plot, do we even really need to talk about the plot itself? I mean, it really ultimately is just talking about gun safety.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about it briefly. So we find out that the DEO advanced weaponry is on the street. John and James go investigate. They find out the manufacturer is selling it, has designed a civilian version of their weapon for hunting, and then we have Lena and James get in an argument, and I thought that was lame in itself. Lena just brings up the fact that she has a gun for self-defense, and automatically James is jumping to the conclusion.
I thought that scene was a perfect microcosm of the entire guns plot storyline. which was, it was a bunch of canned dialogue that real people don't say. They may type it out, but you know what I mean? Like in a normal human conversation, people don't talk that way. And it was sort of just like this idealized version where you have one person who is pro-guns and one person who is anti-guns converse with each other. And it was like, what's the most perfect thing two people could say to each other and have a civil conversation with? Which I like the idea. Yes, in theory, it would be nice if both sides could get along and talk like that. But real people don't talk that way, where she was like, I see your side and I hope that you are able to accept my side. And I was like, yes, BS. Nobody talks that way. Who talks that way? And it was the whole episode, that half of the episode was like that. It was just a bunch of canned dialogue. They were like, I swear to God, it was like they went through like all these different think pieces on gun control and took out the best lines that they saw and then had characters say those lines on both sides. I will say, I mean, they did a good job representing both sides of the argument, which is nice. But ultimately, it just felt fake. The whole thing felt fake.
Yeah, I agree with you. It felt fake. I thought if you're gonna do a story on this, they need to take a whole episode and just focus on this with real dialogue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the conclusion of this is we've got the DEO moving to non-lethal weapons now.
That also felt was a little
odd. Yeah, I thought so too.
Because it also, I don't know, man. I feel like that was sort of, they were hinting at that's kind of what they think the solution ultimately is. And I think that's a risky proposition as a show, to be honest with you, when you sort of put your, like, here's what our solution to the gun control issue would be. It kind of, you know what I mean? It kind of felt like they were saying that police should essentially use non-lethal force. And I was like, I don't agree with that necessarily. And I don't know. I think a lot of people watching your show won't necessarily agree with that either.
That's the conclusion I got from that, too. And I'm like, I don't know about that. I mean, that's
I get their point. I see their point, but it's like, I don't know. And I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have strong feelings towards guns anyway, so it's not like I'm like pro gun and like, oh no, definitely don't take guns away from them. But like, you know what I mean? But even I'm willing to be like, maybe it's okay that police use weapons. Like it might be okay.
Now you gotta admit that the DEOs had advanced assault rifle kind of weaponry, but police don't. They usually have a pistol. And even with a pistol going up against assault rifles, if they're gonna have to call in special SWAT team to deal with that kind of situation, or you know, even they may even have to call in the National Guard to take on something more advanced with the fans. We're starting to see a lot more people have assault weapon kind of things. Whether they get them legally or illegally, they're always going to be out there,
right?
And they have to be dealt with somehow. And I don't know if moving to non-lethal weapons for the DEO is going to help going against aliens that they need advanced weaponry to deal with. You know what I mean? If you get, I mean, some of the villains we saw in season one that Supergirl went up, they were just as powerful as she was. Of course, bullets don't do anything against Supergirl anyways, but you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it was fine for the DEO. I think it's a little dumb, but it was like, yeah, whatever. It's a fictional world. They can make it work because it's fiction. They can write it so that it works.
So,
but I just thought that was the way that they wrote it made it seem, it felt very soapboxy to me. And I was like, that's usually when you have like a very special episode, they don't always necessarily actually address the issue. And I don't know, maybe that they felt like that would just be a waste of an episode, but then I would rather them just not done it at all. Just because it was so bad. It was such a poorly executed episode. I don't mind if you want to do an episode on it, but like, not like that. If that's the best that you can do, just don't do it at all.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm curious. I'm wondering if the DEO is going to be going to some sort of stun weapon. Some sort of space stun weapon kind of thing, which to me, that's kind of cool. All right. Well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
So I've actually got a non-comic shout-out this this week. For the last, like, 3-4 months or so, my family and I, we've been all getting together and playing a board game called Charterstone. It's like a 12-game campaign that you play through a board game, and you're sort of building the board as you go. And it was super fun. It was such a fun experience playing it with my family, who's not really played a lot of, like, kind of more advanced board games like that before. And we just finished the last one up tonight. I had won the most games during the campaign, and I did not win. So my mom ended up winning the campaign by a decent margin too. So I was impressed. So it was. We all had a lot of fun with it. I just wanted to give a shout out to the game, just in case that's something anybody else will be interested in. Go check it out. It's a fun game. I mean, I will say it's not necessarily like the greatest board game I've ever played, but as like a fun family game, as like a basically it was a guaranteed way to get my girlfriend and my family together, and we had this kind of like planned event for like 3 or 4 months. It was great.
All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Robin 2, The Joker's Wild. And I was thinking of what Joker stories could I shout out about, since we were talking about Joker in issue 48 of Batman. Robin 2, The Joker's Wild came out when I was in college, and I remember it being a miniseries featuring Tim Drake taking on the Joker without Batman. The original comics had cool holographic. You had the cover with like a little card size holographic image on it. They were pretty cool to collect. And I don't remember much about the story. I want to kind of reread it myself because I haven't read it since it first came out. But it's a Joker story where Tim Drake takes Batman is absent for some reason, and Tim has to take on the Joker. And basically this is the first Joker's first meeting with a new Robin since Death in the Family. So that's my shout out. We'll have links to it in the show notes. Right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Next time, we'll be talking Batman Prelude to the Wedding, Batman versus the Riddler number 1. Detective Comics number 982, Man of Steel number 3, The Flash number 48, Plastic Man number 1.
Yes.
Mr. Miracle number 9.
Yes.
And of course, we have 2 episodes of Supergirl left, so we'll be talking about next week's. I saw the preview for actually tomorrow night's episode of Supergirl. Looks like it's going to be freaking awesome. Just to let you know, episode 103 is going to be delayed a week. So don't fret, we're going to get it out. So you'll probably have episode 103 and 104 coming out the same week. One sooner in the week, one later in the week. But just to give you guys a heads up, it'll be delayed a little bit, but it'll be there. We'll have some cool stuff to talk about. All right, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.